At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Short disclaimer, this podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 181 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. This week's episode is brought to you by Movement Watches. Movement Watches start at just $95. At department stores, you're looking at like $400 to $500.
Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price to us.
And it really is the best of all worlds. Classic design, quality construction, styled minimalism. I personally have the Silver Pearl, which has a beautiful silver watch band and a mother of pearl inlaid face. And I've gotten nothing but compliments about it.
And I'm glad to hear someone talk about hers because I've spoken of mine in the past. I still have the Venice. It's classic silver. I think it's stainless steel, but it looks silver. It is so beautiful. And the face, so minimal. It's just gorgeous. And yes, I do. It does get noticed when I wear it. And yeah, and I've introduced a good friend of mine to Movement Watches, and she also chose the Venice. And she's in love as well.
What y'all got against
nothing.
Pearls?
We just really like silver, apparently.
So they have over 500,000 watches sold in over 160 countries.
If this sounds good to you, and we hope it does, because so many of you have shared pictures of your beautiful Movement watches on your delicate wrists, and they're gorgeous, and you just show us, like, unbidden. You just send us these pictures and like, oh, Ginger in the summer, look at my watch. I took advantage of the Movement watch link that you guys shared, and I got it. Here's my watch. And you guys, we love seeing them and hearing from you guys because it is a really great product, and it's a very well-priced product, and you're really getting good quality.
You know what happened? They keep sending us the pictures, and I'm like,
I know.
I should have gotten that.
I'm not upset because I think I made the right choice, but I am still in love or in lust. If I get another one, I may have to get that. What was that? That rose gold?
Because the rose gold one.
Summer helped me out with. I was like between the rose gold and the Venice, the silver. And she's like, Ginger, what do you like? I said, I like silver. Okay, what do you wear? What kind of jewelry? Pretty much, I don't wear gold. I just don't wear gold. And she's like, well, then get the one that's going to go with everything else. That you're like, yeah, okay, you're right. And I'm glad I got it. If I only ever got one, that's the right one to get. But next time this comes around, I think I may have to get the rose gold.
So get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmtwatches.com/outlander.
This watch, as we said, has a really clean design. I have been getting compliments on it, like I said, ever since I put it on.
So now is the time to step up your watch game. And you guys, these watches are like solid. Like, it's been taking me...
They're not
It's
dinky.
Taken me like a week to get used to the weight of this watch because it's like a solid watch. Like, it is definitely quality.
But it won't give you cramps,
though.
No.
I can still lift my wrist. I mean, I've been working out with this watch.
With this watch. So go to mvmtwatches.com/outlander.
Join the movement. So, announcements this week. This has been... We haven't had announcements for a few weeks. I want you to know that I've noticed because...
Or like,
I know. Because every time I listen to the episodes, when you put them up, I listen to it and I'm like, oh, that went straight into the... Now it's time for the read-along, which sounds awkward when we don't do anything else. But whatevs. Anyway, we do have announcements this week. Pretty much People's Choice Awards happened real time last night. And even though it was not aired on television, Outlander swept all the categories they were nominated in. They beat, and this is big, guys, because they beat out Supernatural. And Supernatural has a ginormous fan base.
Yes, they do.
So poor Jensen Ackles, if I pronounced his name wrong, I apologize.
You know what? Hold on a second. Hold on a second. Before we go, yes, I'm interrupting your announcements. We forgot to to announce our friend.
I mean, is she, are we going to?
She can be part of the announcements, too. She can comment.
I don't know what you want to announce. I don't know what you want to include her in.
No, you're going to do the announcements, and then we'll chat about them. But she may want to chat, and this third voice coming out of the ether may scare someone.
No one's scared.
We don't want to cause auto wrecks. So who's joining us this week?
It's me, Candida, and I don't wear a watch.
She does.
Well, maybe we need to change that, Miss Candida.
Well, and I want to know, will Ginger tonight be saying the word for me? Remember we promised.
What word?
The N word.
Nipples?
What?
Nipples.
I don't say that word.
Nipples.
Oh, probably not. There's not really a reason to say it.
There's always a reason.
Well, but you can just, you know, say what? It
Ginger,
just to make me happy.
Ginger, she's in a comforter for most of the chapter. So you can talk about how very close to exposing
her nipples
she was the entire time.
Yeah.
But there's no need, though.
Ian almost sees Ginger, her nipples, you know.
The need is purely Candida's. She needs a nipple.
Oh, gosh. Okay, let's go on with the announcements.
They swept all of the PCAs.
Yes, they did. And what were
those categories? They got Best TV Show Sci-Fi, Best Actor TV Show Sci-Fi, and Best Actress TV Show Sci-Fi. So,
is this Sam's first award?
It might be.
I think it is.
I think that they won.
Not including the all those websites.
Well,
you know.
Here's the thing. They did win the PCAs a couple years ago, but I think they just won for favorite show and not for individuals. Because I'm almost positive he got beaten by Jensen Ackles.
Yeah, but I mean one with his name actually on it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He was beaten by Jensen Ackles. So I think that he was up for the PCAs last year, he's on Supernatural. He's super dreamy.
I don't watch Supernatural.
He's my daughter's favorite. Because he plays Dean. And she loves Dean on Supernatural. So my 8-year-old is in love with Jensen Ackles. So I'm not going to tell her that Sam beat him, but he totally beat him.
Is that a YA show? Is Supernatural
not really.
A YA
no.
show?
And, you know, she only tangentially watches it because sometimes I'll have it on while she's doing something else and she'll walk through the room and go, Dean is so hot. And I'm like, you don't even know what that means.
That's just
it
so
is.
Wrong.
I'm like, you're oh, 8. You don't know what that means. Stop it.
Oh, she said that when she was like 7.
You're right. And then at that point I said, you're 7. You don't know what that means.
I know. Any other announcements?
And the only other announcement this week that I can think of is the fact that because they are filming currently in a very public location, which is the streets of Edinburgh, so they can't shut that down, really. There are so many pictures everywhere on the internet, on Twitter, on Facebook, of people with Sam and Katrina. So, and also with older Fergus and with young Ian. So there are so many cast photos, like candid cast photos floating around right now. Get on the internet and look for them. It's beautiful. Or don't. Whatever. If you want to wait because you don't like seeing Sam in period costume climbing out of a Range Rover, that's fine too. You can wait.
I think so. Did we say what our favorite one was?
I mean, clearly your favorite was Caesar. What's his name?
Cesar.
Dumboy.
Whatever his name was. Dumbois, I think. He's...
Fergus.
It's a little... I mean, Cesar is nice and all, but that shot of Fergus, and it was like even offset. It wasn't even filming.
That picture
filming.
To me, all I kept thinking is he needs to stand up straight.
Maybe, but his face and those curls and the holy heck. Yeah.
I'm really glad I didn't see those ones, though. I just saw that one.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I know what I wanted to say, and I tweeted this earlier today, I think. I tweeted it. I didn't Facebook it. With all the stuff that's been coming out and like the Claire and the Jamie and the young Ian and the Fergus, I'm like, okay, especially, and I didn't think about it until I was taking notes today, what I wouldn't give for a shot of Willoughby, but I'm thinking they're going to keep that under wraps.
Yeah, for sure.
Unless, hold on, if it's on the streets of Edinburgh, although in chapter 24, four, five. It's at night, right? Or almost dark, sundown to like dark. And so that's when they're running around with him and he's drunk and everything. It's dark or almost dark outside. So not that people can't be outside taking photos at night. Of course they can, but it's a little harder, I think, than during the day. So, but all I'm saying is if he's outside, it's fair game because they've been doing Jamie and Claire the last 2 days.
Very true. And now on to our read long. This week, we will be discussing chapter 26. I don't know about you guys. I know we had chapter 25 come along, but I'm still kind of reeling from chapter 24. This week, we will be discussing chapter 26, which has my favorite title that I can recall, which is Whore's Brunch.
Anne S., right? AKA, would someone just please get Claire a dress? She spends this entire chapter naked or in a shift. Which doesn't really cover much. Why does no one get her a dress? Even when the madame sees her, she still doesn't get one.
Nope.
Lisa T. writes, this chapter begins with Claire admiring Jamie. It's quite earthy. Quote, he was naked. His back turned to me as he stood in front of the chamber pot he had just pulled from its resting place beneath the washstand. I admired the squared roundness of his buttocks, the small muscular hollow that denied each one, and their pale vulnerability, the groove of his backbone springing in a deep, smooth curve from hip to shoulders, unquote. Glad Claire didn't share her observations on the actual use of the chamber pot.
TMI. I'm just glad that Diana took this moment to give us what we all wanted, which was a rundown.
Jamie's butt.
Of Jamie's physique of Jamie's and butt.
Lisa T. continues, and in a nod to their wedding night, Jamie says, quote, your hair. I called Jamonian Dun. Do you recall my brown one? Unquote. Now here he compares it to beechwood in the rain. And then before, and this is from Ginger, in Outlander, I believe he compares the brown with the water of a burn. Claire wakes up alone in the brothel. Jamie is there in the room. He turns and they watch each other, watching each other. They cannot.
Did you say Claire wakes up alone?
Alone in the bed.
Okay, I was going
to
say.
They cannot take their eyes off of each other. Claire says, you're bigger than I remembered. And he says.
That's what she said.
She's. And he says, she's a wee bit smaller than he remembers. She says, quote, a long time ago, you asked me if I knew what it was between us, unquote. And neither of them actually knew, but it's still there, whatever it was. Though it had changed. And they look at each other in detail and they note all of these changes. And this is where a lot of that description, beautiful Diana description.
So here's my question. Do you think they were just telling each other what they wanted to hear? Because all men want to hear that they're bigger than they remembered. And all ladies wanted to hear that they're smaller than they remembered. So I'm just putting that out there.
Nah.
He really is bigger than she remembered.
That's all I have to contribute. Nah.
You're going to be such a great addition to this episode, Candida.
I know.
Claire learns of more of Jamie's time at Culloden, that it had been a bayonet that caused a scar on his thigh. Claire says she feels bad that she didn't look for him sooner. Meaning sooner than the 20 years, and that she might have found him sooner and they could have been together sooner. But of course, that's all wishful thinking and it wouldn't have made sense. And of course, there's the whole Frank thing, which she doesn't bring up, but there was a reason things happened during that timing, during the timing the way it was. It was Jenny who had saved his leg. Jamie talks of what had happened, how Ian had not wanted them to cut his leg off because they were afraid they may have to save his life. And so the way they save his leg is a number of men from the village or the land sit on him, hold him down, and they slit his leg to the bone. And this always gives me the shivers. And Jenny pours boiling water into the wound. Claire asks him about And starts talking about how he, she's like, but you hid for a few years in the cave, right? And he's like, oh, you knew about that? And she asks him about his hashtag cave life. Sorry. I was typing today. I'm like, that's funny. Gotta use it. She tells him he's a famous Highland legend. And she tells him that Brianna is very
because he's
proud
like
of him.
The Kardashians of the Jacobean era.
Or something. And he's a little horrified by this, saying that he could do nothing else. As opposed to, and of course we're talking about giving up, giving himself up so that his people could receive the bounty, the prize that was on his head, and have something of all of his sadness go towards at least easing some of their
right,
suffering.
But you notice that originally he was like, you know, I'm famous for living in a cave. And he is the original Kardashian because he didn't do anything but live in a cave by his own definition. He is. He's a reality TV star.
He's a reality star. I don't know at what point this is a good time to bring it up, so I'll just bring it up here. But one of the things I wanted to maybe talk about, especially in this chapter, is the transition from young Jamie to mature Jamie. Because in chapters 24 and 25, when they first are together, they're going through the shock, of course. It's the emotional shock of seeing each other again, and they never thought they would. And now we're getting into the back into Jamie and Claire are together again. They're comfortable with each other. And this is our fresh start right here, because in the first book, Claire had her conundrum of how to get back to her time period. She was forced into marrying Jamie. She was forced to rescue Jamie. Then she had this big secret hanging over her that she was from the future. And now here we are where there's nothing, not to say that there's nothing going on in the story, but there's nothing big hanging over them. You know what I mean? Right. I know. But we're not there yet. Right now, everything is just, it's almost like it's kind of, For Jamie and Claire, it's pretty boring because they don't have.
Well, this is like the Lollybrock honeymoon.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess so.
Before the issue,
but
the
even
fan.
There, he still had the bounty on his head. You know, he was still in danger, and now, right, you know, he's been pardoned. But I'm kind of talking about two different things here because there's their fresh start, and until we get to, I don't know what chapter it is where. You know, the big thing happens and that's where we end up with our big problem. But I guess can we just take a moment to talk about the transition from young Jamie to mature Jamie? Because the readers actually, we got to meet mature Jamie before she did. And I'm a big fan of mature Jamie. I mean, I love young Jamie, but I've always been a bigger fan of mature Jamie over young Jamie. And now we're finally there.
I mean, I'm looking forward to geriatric Jamie.
in book 8?
Yeah, when she's looking for herbal remedies for, you know, herbal versions of Viagra. And, you know, arthritis medicine and all kinds of fun stuff.
Well, I mean, even in this, he's not that old in here. At the beginning, though, when she's describing him standing across the room naked and she's refamiliarizing herself with his body, really, but she's not necessarily noticing. I mean, she says he's bigger than she remembered him, but she's not. Claire's mind isn't sharing with the reader any differences that she sees in him, even though she sees differences in herself, of course. And why do you think that is?
Well, we mentioned something, I think it was in 24, because I edited 24, so I know it wasn't. It may have been in 25 too, but I know it was at least in 24. That and other people too, commenters noticed that she was being so hard on herself, and she was so pretty much understandably self-conscious and worried about whether or not, you know, how much she had changed or not, and if she would be anything like he had remembered her, or if he would accept her physically, and or prove whatever. And it was funny that there was so much and. But don't forget, we're seeing this through Claire's eyes. So we're not going to get, well, first of all, she planned it. So she has a lot of time to think about it. Jamie, if he had known something was going to happen, may have had similar thoughts. But I would argue, number one, she had the time. Number two, we're seeing it through her eyes. Number three, she's a woman, and a lot of women are more, not that guys don't have feelings about their bodies, but at least being a woman, I know that women are, I think women are maybe a little more sensitive or self-conscious, maybe harder on themselves because society puts up those things
or
for women. And everything's, yeah. it's like two mirrors reflected back on themselves. It never ends.
Sure.
So,
well, I guess there's not just the physical aspects,
yes.
but there's just the fact that they are both mature. I mean, this is 20 years. I mean, if we think about how much we've matured or not over the past 20 years.
Well,
and I guess we're not.
I think that the proof of their maturity is highlighted in the fact that the first thing they did when they reconnected was not bone each other.
That's true.
The first thing they did was, you know, talk about their child and, you know, look at the pictures and where have you been? How'd you get that? Right.
Go there.
I know. I'm just saying, you know, less mature people would have been like, oh my God, it's you. Let's bone. Totally. I feel like, but to be honest, I don't feel like that we fully know this mature Jamie.
Yeah, not yet. He's, where he's just emerging.
Of course not. And the beauty of, right, the beauty of that is that we kind of, for the most part, get to know him with Claire because we are familiar with older Jamie up to about what, four, like maybe 7 years outside of Culloden? There's like at least 10 years of maturity that we didn't get to witness.
Sure. There's a lot of time that we don't
so
get.
So a lot of the new the new things that Jamie does now and the new Jamie-isms, we don't know and we're learning them with Claire. So yes, we do know about probably up, I don't even know the years, but up to 10 years of his maturity and the things that he's gone through. But there's a full block of at least a decade we don't know anything about.
Lisa T. writes, Jamie fills Claire in on his past. Finally, in another nod to Outlander, think John Wayne. Quote, I had to do something, he said, shrugging. And if the English were fool enough to pay good money for my lousy carcass, well, there's nay law against taking advantage of fools, is there? One corner of his mouth quirked up, and I was torn between the urge to kiss him and the urge to slap him.
It's pretty common.
And S. writes, Jamie tells Claire what happens after Culloden and how Jenny saved his leg. I thought the bit about Ian not wanting Jamie to live as a cripple was weird. Does Ian really not feel that his life has been worthwhile and valuable just because he has one leg? Would he really rather have seen Jamie dead? Would Claire, for all her shallow vanity, still have wanted Jamie? Claire even qualifies first, seeing Ian again as he looked good, the leg notwithstanding. What did this to Claire? When Jamie tells Claire about going to prison, he seems truly shocked at the idea of his acts as being heroic. To him, it was simply his duty as Laird. Even though he no longer was, he always will be in his heart.
Okay, so with regards to Ian, I think that where Ian is in his brain is that I think if he could go back now and make a decision, he probably would have chosen differently. But he's already in it and living in it and adjusted. However, he knows Jamie so well that he knows that that adjustment would never, he would never be okay to not be at 100% and being able to give everything for everyone. So I just think that...
Does that make Ian stronger or Jamie stronger? Which one? I mean, that seems kind of...
I think that Ian probably is stronger, just not only probably in character more than anything else, just because of having those sorts of disabilities and limitations require you to gain other skills and proclivities. I don't know. There's words I'm looking for that I can't find right now, but I think that probably.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I said that. Does that make Ian stronger or Jamie stronger? But I guess what you're saying is that. I mean, that makes, in a way, that makes Jamie weaker because he can't adapt. And
well, and I mean, he did adapt
like
to
that,
the.
I can't say.
He adapted to the loss of that one finger with it not moving as well as it used
come on,
to.
But you can't compare that to.
No, of course you can't. I'm just saying that. Mm-hmm. he adapted to that. So I think he's adaptable, and he's adapted to a lot of things. He adapted to prison life. He adapted to living in a freaking cave for however many years after Culloden.
Yeah, you know, but I think the key would have been, though, not having Claire there. I think that would have been too much. You know, I'd lost Claire.
I could see that. You know, if Ian had Jenny to live with and for.
Jamie could survive anything with Claire at his side.
Well, good thing she's back.
I mean, you know, he didn't want to survive Blackjack Randall, but he did because of Claire.
He didn't want to survive Culloden. The only reason he did is because Jenny wouldn't shut up.
And Melton wouldn't shoot him. I mean, come on. There's a lot of stuff that
all of his other options were taken away from him.
No, I know. Yes, but once again, because Claire wasn't there. You know, it's all about Claire.
Joe B. writes, Jenny comes back into the story as Jamie tells of his leg wound, her determination to heal him as he comes back after Culloden. With a festering wound like before with Ian, she sealed the stump of his leg with a sword. She takes the step that no one else will. Ian, in his own quiet but equally strong way, dissuades Jenny from an amputation. Ian knows Jamie as a soldier and a warrior, and knows what losing a leg will do to him. Even today, surgeons try to keep joints intact if amputation is required. Back then, above-the-knee amputation is likely to have been fatal from blood loss alone, femoral arteries being major vessels. Ian's concerns for Jamie's psychological well-being went out, given there's not much more to lose. Jenny debrides, cleans, and stitches the leg and waits. Her primitive surgery is successful. Her and Ian's psychotherapy schedule is also effective in healing the leg and protecting Jamie's dignity. His pride as a man and as the essential laird of the estate are protected by the darkness. Although I'm sure most of the remnants, etc., are well aware of what's going on. Martina P. writes, Jamie and Claire wake up the next morning and decide that it was still there, this inexplicable special physical connection they shared before. It is just precious. Claire tells Jamie that his daughter is very proud of him and that he is a Highland legend in history books. He seemed to be a great deal more delighted with the fact that his daughter is proud of him than being a legend.
I'm just more surprised that he wasn't moderately outraged that his wife shows up and gives him an inappropriate kiss on behalf of her daughter.
Good gosh.
Your daughter sends you this and then gave him tongue. Whatever, that was weird.
I know she did not give him tongue.
There's a knock at the door, and Jamie agrees for Claire's sensibilities to cover up his manly bits. When she sees it's a male, she goes under the covers. Then she hears his voice. It is Ian. He had gone by the print shop, but Jamie wasn't there. Quote, I never thought to find you in a kittlehoosie, Jamie. That must be like a cat house. Ian isn't entertained that Jamie is in a kittlehoosie. I'm going to use that word as a matter of fact. I might name this episode kittlehoosie. I love that. Ian isn't entertained that Jamie is in a kittlehoosie. He asks for his son, but Jamie doesn't know where young Ian is. He introduces Ian to his wife, and momentarily, Ian thinks he's married to a whore. And then Claire peeks out from under the covers, like, hi, hiya! Ian is shocked out of his mind. We find out that young Ian had left Lallybroch the week before, and he left a note that he'd gone to see his uncle. And it's not the first time he'd run away without his parents' permission. Jamie hadn't seen young Ian for 6 months, however, since he'd last been to Lallybroch with Fergus. Claire lights up. Fergus! Jamie says, yeah, he's changed, but, quote, he'll be fair daft at seeing you once more, Sassenach. Jamie says he'll spread the word about young Ian in Edinburgh and is confident they'll hear something by nightfall if he's still in the city. They go off, but Claire has to stay there. In a slight parallel to Jamie leaving Claire after the wedding in Outlander, he has to leave her to take care of some business as well as put out word about young Ian. He asks, quote, you'll stay here until I come again? Unquote. Did you hear that? Thank you, Bria. Symbolic of all the things she and the reader have yet to find out, quote, I felt much like one who has been handed a sealed casket containing a long-lost treasure. I could feel the satisfying weight and shape of it and know the great joy of its possession, but still did not know exactly what was contained therein, unquote. The dragonfly in amber was now, quote, in flight before me, flickering from place to place, so I saw little more yet than the glitter of its wings, unquote. So whereas the amber or the dragonfly became ensconced, frozen in this amber after at the end of Dragonfly in Amber, the dragonfly or the amber is now, I don't know if you wouldn't say it's melting, but it's becoming liquid. It's going backwards. It's regressing. The insect is now able to move and Claire is coming back to life. A knock on the door is not her breakfast. It was by someone with a long, bony face that was rather pleasantly homey. The face asks, quote, are you Mr. Malcolm's woman? And this person introduces himself, Ian Murray. He is skittish and almost takes off, but she gets him to enter and shut the door. He's looking for his uncle. And she mentions that Jamie is with his father, and young Ian is right peeved that his father would have anything to do with the brothel.
And not only a brothel, but sharing a chick with his friend.
And Claire said she's known Ian for quite some time. And that makes him even more upset. Claire's thinking about all of this, how Ian knew where to find Jamie, whether or not Jamie knew young Ian indeed was already in town. So young Ian basically takes off after telling Claire his age and a few things. He's just like, he wanted to be out of there. Claire's thinking about all this and how Ian knew where to find Jamie, whether or not Jamie knew young Ian was already in town. And another knock brings Mr. Willoughby. He bows his head to the floor in obeisance, apologizing for calling her a whore when she is actually honorable first wife.
He's still offering to like do something to her feet.
Like repeatedly.
Oh, a few things. Oh, I'm so sorry. If you need to walk on me, that's fine.
or can I wash
and then
your
she's
feet?
Like, certainly not.
Show you how sorry exactly. I am. Please let me in. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. She accepts his apology and he says that he is her servant. She finds out from Willoughby that he and Jamie met 2 years previous on the docks. He was hungry and drunk when Jamie found him, and Claire says she wishes she had something to offer him for his headache. Because apparently he's still hungover, or at least has that hangover headache. But she has no medicines. Willoughby replies, oh, okay, forgive me, I'm just reading the dialogue. I don't like reading dialogue like this because it sounds like I'm making a caricature. So I promise we're probably going to not do a lot of quoting of Willoughby because it just sounds bad when we read it. But I'll read this. Quote, oh, not worry, I having healthy balls. And he brings out a white silk bag.
No, forget the bag.
With 2 balls.
Forget the bag. We're not there yet. I love her. She's like, oh, good for you. And then she's like, I'm trying to imagine how, you know, I'm sure there's some sort of, you know, something that connects having good looking testicles to not having a bad life. Because, you know, if you have.
Or a headache.
It was that whole interchange was amazing.
Oh, it was funny. He brings out a white silk bag with 2 balls. They're larger than marbles, but smaller than baseballs.
Can we talk about the bag? Was it a sack? Was it a ball sack?
Summer.
It's a baggy blue silk sack.
About the size, Diana writes.
Ball sack.
Of the average. About the size, Diana writes, of the average testicle. And greenish in color. Streaked jade from Canton.
But a good deal harder.
Oh gosh, a lot.
So hard.
Lisa T writes, this. Not the balls, but the conversation about medicine and health kind of ish is a wee allusion, she says, to Maître Raymond as well. So we understand that Mr. Willoughby is educated in Chinese medicine. He talks about how the whole body or all the body is one part of the body is the whole body and the whole body is the one part of the body. And so he said the hand is the whole body, and that's why him having the healthy balls in his hand and playing with the healthy balls in his hand was going to help his whole body. And then Willoughby says he'll take care. Her stomach grumbles like for the 100th time, and he's like, oh, I'll take care of that. And he says he'll take care of her breakfast and then disappears.
But what here's something he says first wife wanting food.
Yes,
is there something significant there? Does he know that she's a first wife, or why is he calling her that? Anything significant there?
Well, okay. We've read it, so we could guess at that. But I actually didn't think that was anything out of the ordinary. Because in Chinese culture, aristocrats may have had more than one wife. And the first wife always was the honored one.
It's a very layered conversation. Because having read the books, all the books, I have a totally different opinion about this whole conversation. But if I was trying to read this chapter, never having read it before, my initial assumption would be that he's assuming that at some point Jamie deserves to have more wives because he's a special kind of dude. But that being said, I have a totally different opinion of that whole conversation now.
It's so funny because I've read the books too, and I never thought of that reference as anything other than reflecting Chinese culture.
Respect, something respectful.
Because if you read, that's honorable first wife. I've heard that phrase many times. Lisa T. writes, Claire is in need of nourishment. There are also several references to her breasts, which symbolize her ability to nourish. And no, I'm not going to say the N-word just because Lisa T. puts out
the
boobs.
You'll say that, but you won't say nipples? Okay.
Sure. Anne S. writes, I like how Mr. Willoughby at least does not seem to refer to himself as Mr. Willoughby, but by his actual name. And why is he still drunk the next morning? Because he drank a lot. And he's really small. Yeah. Still waiting, Claire takes things into her own hands. She wraps a quilt around herself and goes for a walk. She follows the scent of food down the stairs. She finds, basically, I guess, a kitchenette, a room, or the food room. She finds lots of women sitting at a table. And they start to size her up as the new woman. Of course, these are the whores. Someone finally gives her a plate and some sausages. One woman asks her if she had, aw, ducky, or I'm making that up, but aw, poor girl, did you have a rough one for your first?
Yes, she did.
And they go on and on about how she's not had a rough one, and she's not damaged, and she'll
just
be okay.
Just take a nice hot bath and put some bath salts in your bath. You'll feel right as rain.
And they know whom she's had or who has had her. I tried. Well,
I don't think they do. They don't know that she was with Jamie.
They don't. They just know she's the new girl.
Right. I guess I thought you were saying that they knew who she was with, but they didn't. They don't.
They don't know who she was with. Okay. They've never seen her before.
I misunderstood you.
No. They don't. Right. They haven't seen her before, but they know that Jamie was
there. Yeah, but they don't know that she was with Jamie.
And someone gave her a side eye. I got the distinct feeling that not all of them. When she walked down, they didn't know. But as the conversation goes, someone's like, I don't know how she had her. Or
Ginger.
She had, okay, yeah.
You, my friend, may be very good and knowledgeable about Pentecostal things. However, when it comes to horrors, you need to leave it to me and Candida. I don't think the whores had any knowledge of who she has.
Especially with the recommendation to stick your finger up his bum. And, you know,
yeah.
That's not for Jamie. Well, at least not in this book, but anyway.
The King of Men does not want a finger up his bum.
What book is that in?
The finger up his bum.
Snow and ashes.
The finger up the bum was not for the guy she had. It was on the next one because they said there was a new one. And since she was the newest person, she was going to have to take him.
That was for the finger. None of them have ever been with Jamie. So.
When Madame comes in and someone says there's an early customer, they all assume that Claire will take him since she's the newest. And they're giving her tips on how to make it get over with quickly. One says, stick your finger up his bum. That brings him off faster than anything. I'll save you a bannock for after if you like.
Wow.
Like, I'm giving you advice, and by the way, I'll save you some food because I know you're hungry.
I wonder, because I'm looking forward to the scene just to see, like, Katrina, like, eating all this food and being like, don't you take me away from my food.
I'm hoping they don't cut this scene out. That would be horrible.
They can't. Oh, my God, they can't.
Well, because they have nothing else to cover.
This is so funny, though. It's so brilliant. It's that's the problem with this whole book series, is that all of it is so brilliant, and the books keep getting longer, and there's only so much they can leave in, but gah, it's so funny. I love, like, the misdirection of it.
You know what else is great about this scene is, if we want to parallel it with the scene with Claire and the women at the
where they were wool walking?
Well, the wool walking, yeah. This is the comparable scene, but the whore walk. You know?
Hey, it's the difference between piss and sausages.
Okay, and I haven't finished reading the comments, so you guys might be surprised at some of this. I think. I could be wrong. Oh, no. Deborah C. writes, Claire finds her way to the brothel's dining room and seems to fit right in. It reminds me of the wool walking scene in season 1 of the show. Claire has the ability to fit in and be comfortable with people from very different from herself.
I think Summer would be more comfortable at this table than the other one, though.
Oh, yeah. The ladies notice bite marks and the puffy nose and mistake the damage for rough treatment by a client. Discussion over brunch was great comic relief. Now, the other combination comparison you can make is that, okay, so in Outlander, it was the wool walking scene, and they talk about how peeing and the piss helps set it in, whereas in Voyager, the whore's brunch scene, whereas what makes it set or get over with quicker is putting your finger up their bum.
Hey, perfect. Have any of you tried that?
Summer, excuse me?
Summer wants to add a poll right here.
Hey.
No, never.
Instant poll. Who? Martina, tell me of our listeners, who uses that method to finish quicker because they're not interested in what's going on?
You know she's cutting all of
Or they have an early
Summer.
Consumer.
They're like, I have to go to bed soon. Can we end this? I'm just going to put my thumb up there.
Martina P. writes, Claire grows tired of receiving visitors in the bedroom while being confined to the bed and being naked. It took me a second. I didn't think about anything about this, but I did not think anything differently or sideways about that statement as I was putting this into the comments into the notes. But after what we've just been talking about, Claire has received a lot of visitors, but in a brothel, but not as most
she has
do.
Not although she has not needed to put her finger into any of their bums. They all left of their own accord.
Claire grows tired of receiving visitors in the bedroom while being confined to the bed and being naked. As usual, resourceful Claire takes action and wanders downstairs to join the working members of the Kittlehoosie for breakfast. The ladies are very friendly and give the newest employee a warm welcome. Claire receives a lot of good advice of how to treat her love bites from her first client, who seems to have been just a little rough. I love Diana's sense of humor with the whole breakfast scene. Claire does not make any efforts to correct the misunderstanding and seems to enjoy the female companionship.
I would imagine a lot of these whores would be jealous if they found out who got put those bites on her neck.
Well, to be honest, all that I took away from the scene was, if I go back to 1770 whatever, or whatever this 90 whatever, it's the 1790s.
The bum thing still works.
Forget the bum thing. If I want to eat well, I'm going to be a whore because they get all kinds of yummy sausages and yummy breakfast.
Well,
whoring is the way to do it.
They need to keep their strength up.
They do. They need to eat sausages so they can deal with the sausages later.
And they get to soak their parts in warm water.
That sounds lovely as well, but not all warm water, because some of them only get, as we find later in the chapter, rainwater off the roof. Cold.
Well, that's what she said, though. After breakfast, I'll show you where the tubs are. You can soak your parts in warm water, and they'll be good as new by tonight. I mean, like, so hopefully it's
so. But considering how high in esteem Mr. Alexander Malcolm is, how did he not rate for hot water if the whores are getting it?
Maybe he gets hot water. They get warm water. But
But she got cold water.
Oh, was that when she first got there, though?
No. It was like near the end of the chapter. Later he's off. Like, let's get you a bath.
Okay.
Because you've been hanging out with whores all day.
No, let's get you a bath because you're covered in blood.
Downstairs, though, in the basement, not where the bathtubs are. Yeah,
yes.
That's right. Okay.
So why didn't they go upstairs to a bathtub where it's warm?
Because they were hiding somewhere.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
When Madame sees Claire, she's horrified. She apologizes that Claire didn't.
Horrified.
Oh, gosh.
That was awesome. Go ahead.
I will never be horrified. You will never be horrified.
They're all horrified. This is a chapter of horrified.
That's true. When Madame sees Claire,
can
she's
this
hootified.
Be the name of this episode? W-H-O-R-E dash ified horrified.
Oh no, there's no dash involved. It's all one word.
Okay, go ahead.
Hootified. She apologizes that Claire didn't have her food or clothing yet. She goes upstairs with Madame, Claire does, to get something to wear. While she's waiting, she hears Madame arguing in like just a step over or stall over with a man named Bruno. They both make reference to the fact that they aren't sure Claire is Jamie's wife, but Madame says she's not disposed to argue. As for the maid, Madeleine, the maid who never brought Claire any breakfast and never brought Claire anything to wear, it was the fiend. Madeleine's sister was killed by someone called the Fiend, and this seems to be a serial killer in the city of Edinburgh. There had been killings of girls, typically using a knife or some kind of hatchet, and Madeleine's sister's head had been chopped off, and her head had been put on the mantelpiece and was overlooking the scene. Meanwhile, Claire has put on the dress on the dress form. Is that correct? The one that's hanging?
Yes.
Or something. It's like she just gets pieces to cover herself with. And Claire hears Madame's faint and goes in to help. Madame fainted after Bruno mentioned how the girl was killed. Claire's not concerned what Jamie will think about her dining with the Hooters, but she's really interested in the fiend. Bruno's about to say more when Madame sees the time and jumps up. The fiend was a murderer, as we said, who killed women of easy virtue. There had been 8 killings in all over the last 2 years. All women but one had been killed in their own room. The other, a nun, had been abducted at the docks. Anne S. writes, the fiend, not a fan of this plot.
Well, to be honest, this whole plot, I don't even know if they're going to keep it because it's super unnecessary. If they're going to drop any plot, there's two, and not any. If they were going to drop 2 plots in this entire season, they could drop Willoughby and they could drop this plot. Not necessary.
I think Willoughby's harder to drop than this plot.
She could have figured out acupuncture. She's from the 60s. She could have figured that crap out.
Yeah, no, but it's not just that. It's also
the scene on the island. Yeah, that's
exactly.
Ugh. They could have left all of that out. That whole scene on the island that people who've read the books know what I'm talking about it was interesting, but it wasn't necessary. They could have left that whole thing out. If you get rid of one thing, you can get rid of other things, and then, you know, it leaves you with more room to expand on the things that are necessary. Because it never gets talked about again.
We know Willoughby's in the story. Maybe he's just going to have a very minor part.
Maybe. My whole point with stating that is that because in seasons to come, it never gets mentioned again. It's only in this book, which means it's not required for a thread that follows through the entire arc of the story.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not necessary anymore.
Bruno leaves her, and there's a loud hammering at the door. She opens it, and it bursts open. It's a young man speaking French. He is slender and has an imperious figure, about 30 years old, slightly built, and strikingly handsome. Quote, he glared at me under these, those were his hair, and as he got a good look at me, an extraordinary change went across his face. The brows rose, his black eyes grew huge, and his face went white. Unquote. Milady! He goes to his knees and embraces her around the thighs. She resists and says that she doesn't work here. Milady, you have come back. A miracle. God has restored you. She has a shock and recognizes.
But should she not have assumed immediately that he was, when a French dude shows up in a place that Jamie is associated with, that it was Fergus?
No, because the Madame is French and so is Madeleine, and there are a few French people there. So not necessarily. But that was my first thought. I was like, wait, didn't, especially, well, I, some had a thought. Yeah, had a thought. They embrace tightly. She says that she has seen Milord and knows that and he knows that she is there.
But what I love, about this is that he clearly has not seen Jamie yet, which means he walks in the room and he instantly knows who she is. And so it was like he didn't have any preparation. His just initial reaction is just, oh my God, I need to hug you and have you like next to me, because you were, you know, a mother figure to me for what, a year, 2 years, not long, but not in his formative years.
Yeah.
After the print shop, this really is just such, in my opinion, such a huge chapter because of the introduction of young Ian and the introduction of Fergus and even the reintroduction of older Ian. That's just so much. I mean, and it all happens within
like 7 minutes.
It all happens within, you know, in the first thing in the morning. So, you know, Diana, she really gets all that taken care of. Let's just bring everybody through this whorehouse and let him see Clara. And the whole time she's naked when she meets all.
I know.
Well, that's how you do.
Then
get your shit done. If you're naked, then, get it done.
Then Fergus says, but what about, and just right then Jamie comes in and he was looking for Fergus. And then he's like, basically, I'll tell you more about it. And he's like, we're out of here. And he said he's going to take care of Brandy and the excisemen. Martina P. writes, just have to mention the reunion of Claire and Fergus. What a lovely scene. Only Fergus refers to Claire as milady, and it is so sweet. I love that she did not recognize him right away. This will play out so beautifully on screen.
It better.
Oh, it will. Have you seen César? It will.
I think we're like at the halfway point in this chapter now.
I know. It's okay. Lisa T. writes, not sure what to make of Fergus pressing into the cotton shift at a crotch level, but I'll follow through on my theme of Claire being the nurturer. There were several references to her breasts earlier in the chapter. Fergus is her adopted son, so I suppose his head being in the proximity of her lady bits is a metaphor for her renewing maternal relationship.
It's totally
with him.
Not sexual. Come on.
I see it more of him being in her lap.
She never said it was sexual.
I know. No,
it's
but
maternal.
But her stating that if it wasn't for the fact that it was Fergus, it would have felt, because his face was so close to her crotch. But I'm just stating that for him, it was not remotely sexual, because this was like his long lost mother, who he thought was dead, come back from the grave, resurrected, standing in front of him. And he's bowing in front of her, just like worshiping her in that moment of I thought I would never see you again, and I can't believe you're alive, and I don't know why I ever believed anyone who told me otherwise, and I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, I love how instantaneous it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Lisa T continues, adventure number 2 is also starting. Claire is left alone again, but in her shift. It's comical, but it is significant in that she doesn't have 18th century clothes. She shed her 20th century chrysalis, but has yet to grow her 18th century wings. She's not naked and helpless, but she still needs to don her 18th century identity. Claire wants to join in. She's like, I'm going to get myself covered and I'm going to go down with a movement.
The
movement?
That sounds
no, that's
like
the watch.
Poop.
The movement. The action. She gets herself more covered and goes downstairs. She's at the bottom of the stairs when she sees a man standing in the open doorway from the kitchen. He thinks she's a hur, and
naturally.
Of course, naturally. And asks if they'd sent her down as a decoy. He grips her arm. He starts talking about a reward for contraband. And she remembers what Jamie had said and realizes that this must be the excisemen. Mr. Willoughby backs her up. He appears with a pistol. He says, please let her go. The man starts to debate with Mr. Willoughby, and the latter's like, I gave you my one chance, and just totally shoots him. Oh, God. So awful to laugh at that. She helps him, the man, she knows he's falling, and she like cradles his head. She saves him from just totally collapsing, helps him down to the floor. Fergus bursts through the cellar door, also with a pistol. Willoughby has dropped the gun and is sitting on the stair. Fergus goes over to grasp Willoughby, and that's when Claire sees his hook. Fergus tells her they don't have time to talk about it now, but he will tell her about it. He sends Willoughby, very roughly, by the way, down the stairs into the cellar. The exciseman dies, and Jamie comes up the stairs. He stays with Claire and sends Fergus to guard the front. The Hoors are now coming down to have a look-see at what just happened, all the noise and everything, and Jamie orders them back to their rooms. He pulls Claire down the stairs with him as he carries the exciseman's body, and Claire says that, and they go on a little walk in the dark, and they get to kind of the back of the bottom of the cellar, where Claire says there must have been the Celtic equivalent of open sesame, because the wall opens.
But can we not talk about how random it is that Mr. Willoughby just like is randomly like, I'm going to shoot you. I thought that was totally weird and random. Maybe it's because we don't know much about him right now, but I was just like, what are you doing? And then everyone was like, Claire, why would you do that? She's like, I didn't do it. Your yellow man did it, which is totally offensive, by the way.
I think it's all he's just, you know, he's trying to protect Claire. He doesn't care whether it is an excise man or not. The man has his hands on Jamie's first wife, and that's a huge offense, I guess.
He does, but don't we all think that's a little extreme?
Not for somebody who's drunk.
Well, he's also still a little bit drunk.
Is he?
He's still drunk. Okay. Yes, he's still drunk.
He's clearly not a happy drunk.
And he should not be.
He's happy. Like a whiskey. He got like whiskey drunk where he gets angry and belligerent at people.
And Jamie should just not even let him carry a weapon.
Dude.
Jamie sends Jeanne back to go back upstairs and to get Claire something to wear. Because as they're down there, Jeanne, the madame is down there with them under the building.
Oh, you know what? When you said the part about Claire sees the hook and I almost said Fraser. Fergus is like, oh, I'll tell you about it later.
Yeah.
Like, so it's pretty obvious.
How did she not notice that? Like poking her in the butt when he was hugging her.
That's what, especially when his hand went around her.
They are not talking. Because there's just so much that she doesn't know and he's not telling her anything.
She's like, hey, FYI, Fergus has a hook.
How's Jenny? How's everybody? What happened to Myrta? You know,
oh, this is funny. We have a hook. And a lot of hookers.
What?
Lisa T writes, Claire goes downstairs and again is mistaken for a hoor by the exciseman. Mr. Willoughby intervenes and shoots the exciseman, who dies in Claire's arms. Claire is covered in blood. This reminds me, I saw this earlier. This reminds me of Galus believing that this is not the place, but yes, it's going to come up soon. Reminds me of Galus believing that a blood sacrifice was needed in order to go through the stones. Claire did travel through them without blood, but other than her time with Jamie, she has not been able to fully emerge in the 18th century. It is only after the man is killed that Claire is given clothes and thus able to reclaim her life. Huh.
Okay, but again, I was just listening to our print shop episode where I talked about this then as well. Whereas that Claire never did the blood sacrifice and she didn't need it. But again, it could have made the passage easier for Galus.
And I was thinking about this after the fact. So Galus, when she went back in 68, did not go back 203 years. Galus went back like 220 something years. So her having the blood sacrifice and other stuff she may or may not have had definitely threw her back further.
Well, it also allowed her to perhaps steer and decide where she was going.
Because we don't really know what Galus is.
Well, that's what steering is, yeah.
We don't really know if she had or what her anchor might have been.
It was clearly Jacobean era and Bonnie Prince Charlie.
So she just thought of that, whereas Claire wasn't. I mean, Claire was thinking of Frank.
She wasn't thinking of Jack All. She was just like, what the fuck is going on?
That's his ancestors.
No. Well, as far as we know, she wasn't. What we don't know is that since something starts, is it a loop? And was she thinking
Or was she thinking, where's my soulmate? And then she was like, oh.
No, not the first time. I mean, she thought she was happy.
No, not the first time. But the thing is, and this is a time travel thing. Once she goes back, right? Yep. When Claire is born in 1918, she's already died in whenever she's died. She's already died in the past, according to the timeline. But she can't die until she's born and goes back. So that's why I'm saying it's circular. So when she goes back through the stones the first time, yes, it was her first time, but she, because if it's circular, her anchor would have already been back there.
But she doesn't know it's her anchor. It's really,
it doesn't matter. Her body, soul, existence, whatever does. That's all I'm saying is if you go by that whole circular thing, it's hard to describe and it's very confusing, but I can barely
I think
understand
it. You just broke my head a little bit.
Well, that's the...
That's what I'm saying. TT does that.
You can't die until you're born.
So much. So much.
Exactly.
You can't die until you're born.
So he gets her washed.
I want to time travel Jamie so gets I don't die until I'm born. Go ahead.
Jamie gets her washed with very cold water, and the water, we learn, comes from the rainwater cistern he'd arranged for the roof. They use the water to cut the liquor, and as she's trying to warm back up after her wee bath, he gives her some brandy to help take the edge off her shivers. And then finally, this part made me not laugh, but a little bit like, really? He only like 20 minutes later does he give her his coat. Like, what? Jamie. You're not stupid, Jamie Fraser. What are you doing?
Well,
you're not doing.
Cold down there.
Lisa, apparently.
He likes what he's saying.
Lisa T writes, okay, Summer, hold your thunder okay. Until I'm done.
Wait. Lisa T writes. How many sentences so I can wait for pauses?
It's three paragraphs.
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, Lisa, you're killing me. Go ahead.
But hold on. I might be able to stop in the middle. No. I'll go to the end. I just want to get over it. I'll get it done. Lisa T writes, then, and yes, I'm going there, in a scene reminiscent of Geneva and the Icky Sticky. Quote,
sorry.
Jamie groped in his sleeve and pulled out a large handkerchief, and which he squinted dubiously. What are you thinking about, Jamie? I said, watching him sidelong as I swabbed the last of the smudges from my thighs. The water swirled around my calves, disturbed by my movements, and the candlelight lit the waves with sparks, as though the dark blood I had washed from my body now glowed once more, live and red in the water.
It's just ruined my brain right now.
While the blood is the dead man's, the fact that she is swabbing it from her thighs is reminiscent of the loss of virginity. Claire stated the first time that they had made love the night before that she was, quote, as tight as
what?
Any virgin. Unquote. She did.
That's
in the
because
book.
It's been a
again,
while.
Again, the reference to Claire's bosom and her lack of apparel. In a way, she has been reborn into the 18th century, bare as an egg.
Is she hairy, though? How bare is she?
Bare as in naked, not as in hairless.
I'm just asking.
Anne S. writes, naked Claire in their bedroom then becomes Grand Central Station. Ian, young Ian, Mr. Willoughby. At least when she is reunited with Fergus at 30 years old, she has on a shift finally.
Right?
It's not that you're speaking to the only man in Scotland who has a terrible... Not that part, is it?
Jamie remembers what she said about the dead exciseman. They check the body, and it's not one. He's not an exciseman. He knows them all. The man only had a small penknife and a New Testament on him when he died. Excise men, by law, must carry their warrants with them. Then we find out that Jamie has an arrangement with the superintending customs officer of the district. In other words, he bribes them to look the other way with his operations. And in return, they get some of the good stuff and he can put on the chase and they can catch some contraband and turn it in. That was his business that morning. To meet them and give some dragoons the chase. And Madame Jeanne being late, she was fretting over the fiend, meant he had to circle twice to keep the dragoons from coming to the door of the hurridge. Jamie also left Ian making inquiries at taverns, knowing that young Ian indeed was in town. Young Ian was supposed to be at the print shop. He'd promised him he wouldn't tell his father. Jamie had promised him that he wouldn't tell his father he knew he was coming. Jamie says it's not that he doesn't trust the young'un. Quote, he's a nice, capable lad. It's just, well, you ken how things just happen around some folk without them seeing to have anything much to do with it. That's a huge hint or warning about young Ian. Listen to that line. There are some people, things just happen around them without them seeing to have anything much to do with it. They agree that it's a blessing that Ian is at least isn't a girl, so he probably won't be in any danger from the fiend. Claire says he doesn't have to worry about her. He reminds her, however, I leave you safely in bed waiting for your breakfast, and not an hour later, I find you downstairs in your shift, clutching a corpse to your bosom. And he has to go up the coast in 2 days' time. He doesn't know what he'll do with her. He's not used to the worrying about another person yet. He'd forgotten.
You know, that statement, hang on for a second. That statement, in many ways, kind of bothers me just because I've read the rest of the book. And it, just because he's made, in further chapters, he's clearly made other attachments, commitments, responsibilities, and none of them have remotely required and or invited him being anything more than remotely interested in them. On a, like, on a tangential level. Like, he's just like, meh, I don't care. Not important. Like, I don't know. I would...
He's not saying it's not important. He's saying it, the level of importance, he hasn't had that since Claire left.
He's not, but he also states at the end of the chapter, I forgot what it felt like to fear and what it felt like to worry about somebody else. And I'm just like, but everything else in the next few chapters happened and you didn't care about it. Why did you do it?
He's had 20 years. Well, he's had 20 years. He did fear when he was in the cave. He didn't want his people to get hurt or killed. So he did have some level of that. He did have some level when his men at the prison. He does have some level of responsibility feeling wise for his nephew. But he has never felt the blood of my blood, bone of my bone, responsibility and fear for another soul like he did when he had Claire before.
Right, but...
And that was actually part of the reason of letting her go. Not just to protect the baby, but then he wouldn't have to worry about her. He would miss her, but the fear of what might happen to her when he's away from her was gone.
I'm not disagreeing with that. All I am stating is that given what we know from the chapters that this is leading to, that this kind of pisses me off because he is... very pointedly and goal-orientedly, like he's this totally applies to only these people. It did not apply in X, Y, and Z, but it applied in A, B, and C. And that's
it applies to only
that frustrates
Claire.
Me.
And then he says he'd forgotten, as I said, he'd forgotten what it was like to this worrying so much about another person. And then he looks at her and he says, come along. I'll tell the men you're my wife. The rest will have to wait. So they'll figure something else out on another day. But for now, you're my wife, and we're going to make sure everybody knows it. Anne S. writes, all the brothel stuff feels like a bad farce, although I love the term fille de joie. I have questions, Anne does. She says, why does Jenny send letters to the brothel? Why not the print shop? Why... would Jamie not want any links between the brothel and Lallybroch?
Well, probably his name. He's not using his... Well, I suppose she could send the letters to A. Malcolm.
But then that's probably... Yeah, you're right. They probably don't want a link between A. Malcolm and Lallybroch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So Fergus asks if Claire had seen Jamie yet. How did he know she was even there if not from Jamie? That's a good question. So why was he coming? He was concerned about that door being opened, right? So Jeanne saw that she was late, ran downstairs. Claire was still in there. And before you know it, there's hammering on the door. So Jamie was meanwhile circling with the people so he wouldn't bring in the dragoons. Is that right? And so my guess is that Fergus, so she's asking, how did Fergus show up? How lucky was that that he showed up if he didn't know she was there and Jamie hadn't said anything? Fergus was not with Jamie. Fergus was probably downstairs in the cellar or wherever it was that they did the handoff, the unloading. And there was no Jamie. and the door was an opening. So he went inside to find Jeanne, and that's where he saw Claire.
Probably.
Is that right?
I think so.
Okay. Okay, why does everyone insult Mr. Willoughby? Fergus calls him a canaille, which means dog, and Claire literally refers to Mr. Willoughby as Jamie's pet Chinaman. Ugh. Well, Anne, there's a lot. This is a loaded character.
I mean, I could speak about this, but it's going to be offensive. Do you want to be offensive? Are we doing that?
No, we're not. We're not.
What I'm going to say is not offensive. It's just the state of this whole thing is offensive.
Yeah, but back then, in the 18th century, this wasn't politically incorrect for them to refer to him that way.
Yeah, there was no PC in the 18th century. There was no PC in the early in the mid to late 20s. Well, late now. Maybe. well, yeah, that's true.
So my opinion about Mr. Willoughby is that he was created in a time that was less than PC. Like it got more PC over time, and luckily he was not invented in the latter days, like when I first found this series. Like he was already a part of the series when I discovered it. And that was, I think, at a time that we weren't nearly as sensitive. That's how I'm going to state it. Sensitive to other people's feelings and other racist feelings. Honestly, just other people's feelings. Let's be honest. Let's not even make it about racist. It's just like, I would never personally make any of those statements about anyone I've ever met in my life today. And, you know, part of me is like, hats off to Diana for being brave enough to make it a historical novel with historical accuracies, because this is probably a historically accurate portrayal of what the people in that time period would have thought.
How they would have treated him. Yes, exactly.
How they would have treated him. That's historically accurate. Is it okay today by today's standards? Hell no. However, to the time period, it is true, I believe. And that's all I can say about it. I have nothing else.
At the same time, yeah, there's some, you know, talking down to him, but also it's not like they hate him, and it's not
they're,
like they,
well, and that's the other thing. They're not trying to talk down to him. That's the thing I took away from it as well. They were not actively trying to talk down to him, but Claire's introduction to him was, hey, he does inappropriate heathenist things to feet.
Freak.
Don't let him touch you. He's weird about it. Don't let him touch you. That being said, she's like, I already am. I think that you're automatically trying to touch my feet in an inappropriate manner. So anything you say about feet.
So now she's already biased.
Right. She's already biased because all she can take away from it.
Because he does want to touch her feet.
He clearly
does. And there's
nothing
wrong with that.
No,
she doesn't want him to touch her feet.
Feet can be beautiful, but not everyone thinks that way or wants you to touch their feet.
Great. But if you're not, then, you know, back off.
And the end of the chapter, Anne says, ends with a truth. Now that Claire is back, Jamie remembers fear.
And joy.
Fear of loss.
And joy, he says.
Fear of loss, once again. Jamie asks Madame Jeanne, when you come back, can you bring down some clothes for my wife? If her gown's not ready, I think Daphne is maybe the right size, unquote. I love this little exchange, Anne says. It shows how observant Jamie is, like knowing Claire's courses. And finally, Martina P. writes, Claire being the catastrophe magnet that she is, gives Jamie a new problem to deal with. I feel for Jamie. It is exhausting to read all the many things he has to juggle at one time. Nevertheless, through all of this, he becomes more familiar to the reader. It feels like the old Jamie is back.
That's true, because like he said that he, you know, with he takes a lot more risks, and not that he's careless, but he doesn't have, you know, her to worry about. So he doesn't, I don't want to say he doesn't think about what he's doing, but he probably takes more risks. Especially everything that he's been through. You know?
Think about it, though. If we didn't have to consider other human beings' lives and experiences in this world, we would do so much more. Exactly. For instance, I have an 8-year-old. There are many things I would like to do that I don't do because I have to make sure that I care for my 8-year-old. So that was chapter 26. Please join us next time when we discuss chapter 27, Up in Flames. And thank you, Candida, for joining us again.
Thank you, ladies, for having me again.
And thank you, dear listener, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.